Hello, and welcome to Loopholes, your weekly discussion podcast about all things esoteric and esoterotic. I'm Kate Cheryl, hello.
And I am Ian Bolesworth, hello. And what episode is this, please?
This is 28.
Episode 28. So it has taken to episode 28 for you to promote this podcast.
How so?
I mentioned this either last week or it was recently anyway, but... I watched you on a podcast this week. I forget what it was called. It was two lads, and they were talking to you about stuff, and they plugged loopholes. You did, like, maybe 10 minutes at the beginning, all about loopholes.
Yes.
All after I'd said that you should promote it.
You say said. You say said. Whinged.
Ordered.
Quite a good... Okay.
I don't do interviews.
I know you don't, but I, you know...
I'm a mystery guy now, me.
Can you be a self-imposed enigma?
I think so.
Is that what you're kind of going for?
I think so, potentially. But don't try and shift me off the scent here.
What I do want
to say is one of those boys...
Yes.
It was all very nice. I listened to it today. It was brilliant. Listened to it today because he had to, because he was interviewing you. But then there was a thing of going, and what's the boy called? As in me.
Well, yeah, you know, it's...
What's his name
it's
again?
It's order of importance, you know. I can't help if I'm the glittering breakaway star.
You, boy on podcast, listen to me now. I am a very significant person in the esoterotic community. And you have made a very powerful enemy.
You're not always going to be Beyonce. Sometimes you're going to be Michelle or Kelly.
A very dangerous enemy is what you have made, mate. And if I ever remember your name, then you are for it. But you were very good on it.
Thank you. I had my moments.
I think they were a bit in awe of you.
I doubt it, but that's a lovely thought.
And all the people in the chat and all that, they were all in awe of you as well.
Well, half the people in the chat were people that I'd accidentally insulted before, so I'll take being in awe as an excellent outcome.
Should I be in awe of you on this podcast? I'm not going to, but should I? Is that, like, is that the perception of you? Are you intimidating?
No. Well, I love the idea because I've always considered myself... to be the most meek,
right,
sort of underwhelming little book goblin. So to have the thought that I could ever be intimidating is quite a novelty.
I have it all the time, eh? Have you got any comments on your Patreon?
I do, thank you very much. Shall we do a little read through?
How many have you got?
I have 10 comments on mine.
I have 11.
Oh, that's cruel.
For a while, I was watching our respective Patreons, and for a while, you were soaring ahead on the comments. I guess my patrons are just a bit slower. Maybe they're slow. Why else would they be on my Patreon? Okay, well, loser goes first, as always, so let's hear your comments.
Okay, Warren says, glad you had fun with that one. It was a bit hard going in parts. Why am I hearing the phrase long-suffering?
What did we do on the last episode? Because we in Patreon world have had a week off.
Yes.
Because I ran away with the circus.
Yeah, you ran away with an imaginative circus and I ran away to look at graves in real life.
Yeah. So. Do you think you'll ever see every grave?
Oh, I can only hope.
Do you think that
I'd love
could
to
happen?
See all the interesting ones in England.
Well, go on, back to Warren's comment. So what was Warren saying? What did we talk about last week?
Last week was the aura and Crown Court.
Oh, right, yes, of course it was.
As far as I know, it refers to your successful new career as a barrister.
Is there an implication there that I was annoying in the last episode? Is that what's happening there?
No, I don't think so. I remember when this came through at the time, I thought, that refers to something to do with the aura, rather than how intimidating you are as a barrister.
Legal legend.
Since we've had a week off, we can say that you are an intimidating legal legend, and
thank
I will
you.
Be your secretary with my 10 comments.
Next comment, please, Dave... secretary.
Dave Tyra says, anyone who claims to see auras needs to go to Specsavers. Did you know in Middle English, aura meant gentle breeze?
If you had no pre-existing knowledge of the phenomena of auras,
mm-hmm.
and didn't subscribe to that as being a real thing anyway, as myself would be included there. So if I was seeing what people describe as auras, I'd be straight the doctors, immediately being checked that I wasn't hallucinating in some way.
Well, I suppose so, but unless you discussed it, I suppose it's what's normal. And it sort of leads into what we'll talk about later, about this changing ideas of perception.
But as a general point, things that are paranormal, spooky, supernatural, esoteric, whatever, all those mm-hmm. things, if you went to the doctors and said, this has happened, mm-hmm. a doctor wouldn't go, well, it's either an issue with your retina yeah. or it was a ghost. So it's a...
No.
Do you know what? Do you not think there's huge similarities between the esoteric world and Twitter? I think sometimes, or any social media for that matter, sometimes mm-hmm. with social media, if you spend a lot of time in there and on there, and that's your observation of the world, that's what it is, suddenly you start thinking this is what the world is like. And the world yeah. isn't like that at all. Like, not even vaguely comparable to Twitter in terms of walking down the street and seeing what's going on. So do you think the paranormal world is a similar thing?
I certainly think so with, like, the dissemination of ideas as well, because someone can just tweet one thing and then suddenly that will roll along and gather lots of weight. And I think the same kind of applies with, definitely with the paranormal, in terms of levels of scepticism or levels of belief. You know, there can be a sudden spike in a particular piece of equipment, just how wonderful it is, but also a particular spike in a particular method of debunking, or, you know, what's seen as something foolish to believe in. And it's trends. I think none of us are immune to, you know, changes in popular thought and changes in trends. It doesn't always have to be a Tamagotchi.
Objection. Objection, Your Honour. I'm completely immune to it.
Sometimes, you know, it can be something else. It can be like a sociological movement.
Yeah, but that community, the ghost yeah. hunty people and the people that are really well into the esoteric and all that, is minute.
It's a tiny active community, but the product of that community is consumed by a far greater field of people outside of it.
Yeah, but are they fully invested in any way? Like members of my family believe in ghosts. Mm. But if you pressed them on it, they wouldn't be able to have a articulate and intelligent conversation with you about it.
No, but not...
It'd just be, yeah, I believe in that.
But not everyone feels the urge or the need to kind of extrapolate on those beliefs. It can just be as simple as, yeah, I believe in ghosts, I watch whatever show once a week. And that's their whole interaction with esoterotica. And that's just as valid as people that are running up onto hilltops every night trying to communicate with UFOs with a bit of tinfoil.
Nah, you're just keeping the numbers up. I've had numbers quoted at me load saying this many million people in the world are actively believing ghosts and all that, and I just don't think it's true. I think that's people with a passing thing of, do you believe in ghosts? And they go, yeah.
That still counts. The numbers of people, say in England, that when there are censuses and things like that, when you have to record your religion, so many people will record Church of England, say they're Anglican is just a basic go-to because they're kind of vaguely culturally Anglican.
Yeah, but people put in Jedi and that sort of thing because that gathers momentum as an idea to do that, but they're not Jedi,
separate from the Jedi people, the people that say that they believe in God can still believe in God in a loose capacity without being active worshippers within a community. So I think there's kind of this weird sort of secondary cultural aspect to esoterotica that people will say, like, yeah, I believe there's probably aliens out there. But if you press them on it, they haven't thought about it much because they don't need to.
Of course they need to.
They might not want to have their lives completely overtaken with this sort of thing.
Yeah, but you need to think about anything that you believe in. You need to think about who you are as a person, how you've arrived at that. You can't just go blindly going, yeah, believe in that, yeah, believe in that, with nothing.
But maybe that belief doesn't ever crop up in conversation, doesn't ever crop up in their lives, so it seems to be relatively unimportant.
God, what a waste of a brain that is.
Most people, if you say, do you believe in ghosts, they might say, yeah. And then haven't given it much thought. But that's fine, because they don't need to. Maybe they have to put a lot more thought into different aspects of their lives, which is perfectly serviceable, because there's always, you know, another self-imposed hermit nutter with 5,000 ghost books around them, hello, who will pick up the slack and make that a massive part of their identity.
Yeah, but it knocks on to other things, though. So I've said this loads of times. If you are the sort who is that easily influenced that you go, yeah, without any thought whatsoever, then you would also go, yeah, okay. about things that are really important.
Well, yeah, but that's society as a whole, isn't it? We're all just treading water at the minute.
Well, I think people should be cold.
Right, so the next comment is from Annette Truby. Annette Truby said, King's Counsel Ian was particularly argumentative today. When they review his glittering legal career many years from now, they will recognise your efforts to resist bludgeoning him to death with a magic eye picture.
Wait, was that a criticism?
In that you were very good with
particularly argumentative is what she said.
Well, that was your tack.
That's all a barrister does is argue. That's their job. If a barrister stood up to defend you and went, watch your case and went, don't know, the other side sounds plausible. It's my job, mate.
Well, thank you, Annette. That was very nice. James Flock said, Hi, Dr. Kate. Thanks for another great loopholes. I would really be interested in an episode dealing with the interaction between the law and the esoterotic and what loopholes have been used there, particularly if any recent cases have been heard. Also, kudos on dealing with Boldsworth Casey's cross-examination. Whilst I know Ian was being humorous, it's worth reminding people that even when the law might be black and white, it has to be applied to the relevant facts of a case, which can add the shades of grey.
I was doing.
To use a not brilliant analogy, you can't ask, is it illegal to drive at 40 miles an hour, yes or no, since the correct answer will depend on the fact of the speed limit of the road in question.
Completely different argument.
But as for esoterotic and law, I think that would be a really good rabbit hole to go down. Because, you know, I've sort of been a little bit obsessed this week with looking up historical cases from the Old Bailey about mediums on trial. So I've certainly got a hell of a lot of opinions on that front.
Yeah, but the argument last week was to do with if it was legal for a medium to do what they do, essentially, and charge for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the only grey area with that is, well, yes, it is illegal, unless you put in caveats. But everything that's illegal is illegal unless you put in caveats. Murder is illegal unless you are in a war.
Mm-hmm.
So you can throw in caveats, but in the letter of the law, you know, that's not how the law would work, that you would apply certain situations. Well, were you tired that day? Not guilty. Were you a bit irritable when you killed that man? Yes. Okay, not guilty. We've all been there, haven't we?
Well, I think we should look into that more.
I know what James is saying. James actually left a comment on my Patreon that I started reading and then I went, oh, there's too many things in that. Which was, can I just read it to you?
Yeah, go for it.
Another great episode as always. I was very interested by the conversation on the Punishment of Fraudulent Mediums Act 1951, REP 2008, and the Consumer Protection from Unfair Trading Regulations 2008 that sought to replace them, and could listen to a podcast just on that and any real cases that have been brought. I ended up looking at the 2008 regulations out of interest and think how they would apply to mediums, and what I think is most interesting is the PFMA had an explicit carve-out for anything done solely for the purposes of entertainment that the 2008 regs don't have the same. However, the offence in the 2008 regulations requires any dishonest practice to be likely to cause the average consumer... And that's the point where I just stopped and went, I can't be a barrister. I can't dig through all that stuff.
It's like pick up sticks, isn't it? I think this is why so few cases in recent years have really gone to court. Because, of course, there's the, you know, entertainment aspect of things and mediums saying that they won't give you direct advice on financial matters and things like this. And the only ones that really go to court and hit the papers are ones where there's been issues of altering wills, people being manipulated into altering their wills, and requests for money via the other side. There was a medium called Lamar Keane many years ago who wrote a book called The Psychic Mafia, and he was a very, very famous medium for a long time, and he was entirely fraudulent and obtained a hell of a lot of money, land, large gifts by nefarious means. Now, he later came out with the Psychic Mafia and whatnot and said that, yes, it was all a fraud, and named a lot of other people, kind of his co-conspirators or the fellow mediums of his group, who were all fraudulent as well and who all, like, received very large gifts of money and land by impersonating the deceased of someone else.
Did they also receive very large jail sentences?
As far as I know, there really weren't that many legal ramifications at all. There was no big court cases. It was just a big confessional. And I think an attempt was made on Keane's life because he was exposing others. And the same would go down the centuries. Once you go into kind of the great age of magicians becoming debunkers and writing books, not just Houdini, but many others like him, who would go around and say, I watched someone pretend to be the dead wife of so-and-so and take diamonds from that man's pocket pretending to be this dead woman. Those sort of levels of impersonation, that the only things that really can go to court, but then it would rely on the testimony of the person who has been deceived. And then we can all just go back and watch the episode of Crown Court again. Were they given willingly as gifts or were they conned?
Said it before and I'll say it again. The esoteric community is evil. Next comment, please.
Next comment is, Sophie Cleverly, one of my top favourite books is Good Omens, and I've always loved the part where it's revealed that Anathema, a witch more or less, can't see the aura of Adam, the Antichrist, for the same reason that people in Trafalgar Square can't see England. I feel like since Good Omens contains such things as auras, prophecies, demons, aliens, the Fortean times, mediums and reigns of frogs, that it is pretty much the ideal companion to loopholes. I suppose that counts as a book recommendation for everyone.
No, I don't know it, though. Wasn't there a TV show of it as well?
We could say that that is the Amazon tie-in series and book recommendation for loopholes, then.
Oh, there's ours cancelled.
Said recommendation, not officially endorsed. Tango said, rather than being a smug naysayer, I held out my hand and played along as instructed. I'm stoked to discover my strong red aura means I'm well-grounded, energetic and strong-willed. But it's entirely possible that it was more to do with the taillights of the Audi A4 in front of me on the M40 at the time, rather than anything supernatural.
You've got to do it in scientific conditions.
Maybe not while driving, Tango,
you
please.
Talk about scientific conditions quite a lot. A lot of the time you'll say, and it wasn't actually scientific conditions, about things. What would scientific conditions be, in a nutshell?
Where there's a lot of external control, when the environment itself is, like, what's in it. The temperature, the means, the people around them, where every single avenue is monitored and conducted by unbiased people, the results of which will then be peer-reviewed. I think it's so pernickety and hard to achieve.
It's impossible to achieve, though, with something like that. So if we take auras as a case in point about, mm-hmm. Look at your hand and look at the aura, you could take everything out of the room. You could make the room entirely sterile. So it's like, right, nothing at all. Nothing is interfering with us at all. But you can't take the eyes out of the person. And people's don't always show what is in front of them.
Yeah, I think a lot of esoteric things can never be scientifically studied because by definition they have to be unscientific to work.
Yeah, that's that tricky argument that you all use, though. But
oh.
What I don't think gets... And I really do actually think this doesn't get enough attention on it, is how fallible human interpretation is, just in terms of the basics, your senses, just in terms of hearing, memory, sight, all those things are very flawed. Memory particularly is very flawed. Sight is very flawed, particularly when you're wandering around in the dark with a torch. If you catch the torch in your eyes and stuff, you get all sorts of blobs in your eyes. So really, under my new world order, I'd make it legal that ghost hunting can only take place in bright light, in normal daylight hours. That's it. Anything night, in the dark, complete dismissed immediately. And I actually mean that.
Yeah.
I'm not messing, I mean that.
So a curfew for all ghost activities.
In daylight, in a house if you want. You can do it in a house with the lights on. You can't do it in pitch black with a torch. You can't do that.
Right. Okay, right, we'll note that for when you run for office. Nathan Locke said, not a big fan of reboot culture, but if Ian wants to put his name to a new series of Crown Court, he'd have my full support.
Did they have the same barristers every week in that? I think they're different ones.
They are different, but it's a reboot, so we can make you the singular reoccurring character. It can only just follow your cases.
It was the bloke, that one we were talking about the other day in private, and it was the bloke, Demon Headmaster, you said he was.
It was the bloke who was the Demon Headmaster, was a barrister on it, yeah.
I haven't seen that. But he was quite, like, evil in that, wasn't he?
He was very good.
He was devilish.
Yeah.
He didn't win, though, spoiler alert.
No, but it was very good. All of my YouTube recommendations now are just solid series of Crown Court.
Okay.
PJ said, Ian touched on the social construction of reality. In isolated circumstances, it's very...
You usually do.
Yeah. It's very easy to start doubting yourself. Soon the firm footing that we think as reality can start dissolving. What was that noise at night? Mice or a poltergeist? Even with another person as company, things can get carried away. Back in the day, they brought into a rule that lighthouses must have three keepers. I think the situation would be better if we had an esoterotic ombudsman, a third party of Rumpole of the Loopholes, who can step back and look at the broad sweep of history and get things in their proper balance.
I mean, that's sort of what I'd do anyway, just in my spare time.
I suppose so,
If that could be a job, I'm more than happy to take it.
Yeah.
Why do lighthouse keepers? Why do there have to be three of them? I don't know about that.
I don't know about that either. I don't really know that much about the history of lighthouse keepers, apart from those ones that disappeared by the Bermuda Triangle.
Is it perhaps to do with, because it's got to be 24/7, is it maybe that?
Maybe. Maybe for like sleep deprivation and things like that.
Yeah. And maybe to do with as well that half of your lighthouse keeping is done at night with a great big bright light. So probably best to get another pair of eyes on every situation, just in case the bright light in the dark has made you see things that simply aren't there.
So maybe one's to look for ships and the other one's to bat away moths.
Yeah.
But that's all my comments.
Okay, I've got Richard Shaw Wright, Bolesworth of the Bailey, on after the GB News Spooky Hour for entertainment purposes only. Agreed? Agreed? We're both going to sign up. Look, I think we've been too knee-jerky here. I think our reaction to being on GB News, I think we've both got the right opinion on it as a thing.
Yeah.
But I also think, as I was mentioning, we could change, well, we could change our bit from the inside. We could infiltrate it and still use it as a platform. Then I can speak to idiots, like, direct.
Yeah, I suppose.
Straight down the camera. Richard also says, there's a most haunted tour coming up. I fear I may be dragged along, but could take the Yvette Field and Ghosts board game to be signed.
Oh, now there's an idea.
Are you going to the most haunted tour?
Yes.
Are you? When are you going to that?
I don't know. Whenever you say you're free, I'll drag you along
to
a date.
I am not going to the most haunted tour. I can't watch it with you and be outside with a placard, can I? Can't do both. James Flux said, well, I read you the majority of what James said. It's very interesting.
Yes.
It's a huge interesting point, but it'd be a lot of stuff for me to regurgitate here now. But noted, James, noted. I'll try and decipher my way through it and put it into layman's terms, and then we can maybe have a look at that. Annette Truby, things like auras, star signs and fortune telling feel like the gateway drug to full-blown belief in the esoterotic. They feel like harmless sideshow attractions that open people up to other possibilities and therefore potential exploitation.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree to a point. I don't think everyone would fall into heavy esoterotica, but certainly it's dipping your toes into it, isn't it?
But if you believe in it, if you believe in something that's demonstrably untrue, you're dangerous.
You know, I don't think that... it's like not everyone who tries a Class C drug will end up on Class A.
Yes, they will.
Oh, right, okay. I'm sorry, Mary Whitehouse. I'm
Andy
terrible.
Walker, envoy from the 90s, especially Echo the Dolphin. After the Restoration, Charles II had the body of Cromwell exhumed, put on trial and beheaded. If you're going to hold a grudge, commit. Also, Ian wants to be a barrister. Maybe I could be the world's first blue medium. I mean, this is turning into like Make-A-Wish Foundation, this, isn't it? I want to be a barrister because I can contribute something. If you want to be a blue medium, and Andy means rude, not like blue man group.
Yeah. Although, to be honest, you might have more luck being actually physically blue, as in with popularity in marketing.
I wish they all were. Matt Ebbs, Cult Mountain Goats. I find the whole conceit of mediums really complicated. Oh, it's all right, Matt. We've tried to explain it, mate, but if you can't follow it, that's okay. I've met people who truly believed a medium had contacted their dead loved ones and told them things they never could have known. I'm very aware that this is done via many tricks and wordplay, but it gave them so much comfort. I've lost a number of close family members now and have no urge whatsoever to go to a medium, but in many ways I'm quite jealous of the comfort they can gain from their experiences. I can sit on my high horse and say it's all clever words and phrases, but the harsh truth of the world is, to me, that when someone's gone, they're gone, and that's really hard to deal with at times. I'm interested in both your perspectives on this. I'm very much on the side of mediums are exploitative, but I've seen firsthand how some people with faith in them have been able to seemingly deal with difficult deaths much more healthily because they've been told their loved one is happy and looking over them. It does feel like faith in some form of afterlife allows a certain level of comfort that a more scientific view, which I would certainly align much closer with, would allow.
Ooh.
So you and I, Kate, have very different opinions on this, right?
Yes.
Because I take comfort, in a nutshell, I take comfort from, as Matt said, when you're gone, you're gone. I take huge comfort in that, that it's just not existing anymore.
Yeah, that does the absolute opposite for me.
Yeah, but it's that thing, because of the way that faith works, and certainly how religions work as well, like, you know, if you lose a family member and someone's very religious says, no, they're up in heaven now. Everyone goes to heaven, apparently. Everyone goes to heaven. Every funeral, they're up there now. Everyone goes to heaven. Yet, when you step out of the funeral, you've also got the doctrine of, or you might go to hell if a boy has kissed a boy. By the way.
Yeah, well, that's very wrong schools of belief.
But of course it is, but that's your opinion, really, isn't it? Because there are people who subscribe to this, who hold the opinion that that is actually wrong and you should go to hell for it. Abhorrent as that would be to you or I, there are people who, because they subscribe to this, because they subscribe to this faith and this religion and this idea of an afterlife and a fantasy, paradisey world as well, they also subscribe to that that boy over there kissing that boy will burn in hell.
Yeah, but I also think that's quite a reductive view of contemporary Christian belief that has many, many sects and denominations. And I think most people who would hold, well, most right-minded people, I know that might seem like a contradiction in terms, who hold Christian beliefs today, I think would hope that those people, if, you know, if and when the day of judgment comes, if they go to heaven, that they will then learn the errors of their ways and the errors of their exclusionary and cruel belief systems.
But it doesn't matter at that point, does it? Because it's their existence on earth that is the issue. And they have that existence and that belief because they subscribe. It's, I don't think it's reductive, because I'm not saying everyone who's religious, anyone who's, you know, Catholic or just Christian or whatever their belief system is, I'm not saying they all believe that, but I'm saying it is part of it. It's in the books, if you can read it in the right way. Or the wrong way, obviously.
But I also, the thing is with a lot of Christian denominations, they see time on earth as kind of a lead up to the biggie, which is eternity, glory in the heavens and so forth. And so that's where it's tricky, and that's where you see so many people be abhorrent in life or sacrifice their lives on earth, believing that a far greater life awaits them in heaven. You know, so I think there's kind of this strange duality as well to those sort of beliefs.
No, that's true, because they never impose it on other people either, do they not? They never.
Well, no, I'm not saying they don't. I'm not saying
or abusive to other people that supposedly don't fall on the right side of their God.
When I say people that have sacrificed their lives, I mean, like, maybe they've sacrificed their lives in service. Maybe they've sacrificed their lives quite literally in martyrdom. You know, and so if you look upon those acts of sacrifice from a non-religious perspective, then you'll come out with a very different understanding of what their belief systems were than if you were looking at them from inside those beliefs.
But people that are ultra-religious and people that are dogmatic about that sort of thing, whilst they're here, us lot have all got to deal with them.
Oh, yeah. You know, the imposition of any kind of religious beliefs, I think, on people that are unwilling and would be harmed or would have rights removed from them otherwise, I think is abhorrent. And I think that's where boundaries are very much needed with the regulation of religious beliefs, definitely, heaven or not.
All I can say from my side is I would never stand outside a church, even though I don't agree with it and I don't agree with how it operates and all that sort of business. For the most part, I would never stand outside a church saying, no, you can't do that, stop it, or throw things through window and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, but that can't be said for a lot of people who are like that. So that's what I'm saying. We've got to deal with them while they're doing their audition.
I know, and it's tricky. And I wish I had a magic wand with an answer. I just don't.
Louis Crawford Wilson, I watched a documentary about James Randi the other day. I think he was quite misunderstood. I think what may have been perceived as aggression was him wanting to help people. Oh, I wasn't. So when I said the other week about that sometimes I found him aggressive, I meant that. I meant sometimes. That he was.
Yeah.
That was just a thing that every now and again you go, oh, you might have played that wrong.
Yeah, definitely. And I think those times would be outside of incidents, like all the faith healers stuff. I think with that, you had to be
formal. It wasn't
a
majority of the time that
No.
I don't think he was happy with the Uri Geller situation, as he definitively disproved him on Carson, yet people still believed his claims and showed how Geller was just using old magic techniques, but saying they were real, and they both made it personal. He was also trying to make sure people got correct medical attention. He was active in trying to stop faith healers dangerously curing people, in quotes, of their life-threatening illnesses. Yeah, I agree with all of that. I wasn't calling out James Randi when I was talking about him.
Yeah, completely.
As a general idea, I thought he was ace, same as most people thought he was ace.
Definitely, yeah, I don't have anything bad to say about him.
Tango of the Robes, focus on one point, let your eyes relax, on my upper body, kind of like on my sternum. That's a quote, that is.
Yeah.
From something you said last week, that only in the edit did I hear it and go, she's telling me to look at her boobs?
Yeah, yeah.
Were you flirting? Is that what was happening?
Yeah, the only way...
I just missed it.
The only way I can flirt nowadays is through very vague esoterotic commands.
Tango says, I'm not sure whose words Kate was reading, but I fear it might be someone who was caught having a prolonged pervy stir and had to come up with an excuse quickly.
Yeah, it's the esoterotic Anne Summers version.
Chris Carpenter, a great podcast as always. What are your thoughts on the Philip experiment, where a group of doctors and others attempted to create a ghost by creating a backstory and using seances to try to conjure Philip?
Well, I think the Philip experiment is really, really interesting and definitely merits its own standalone episode. But yeah, okay. I think it's a very, very interesting example of kind of suggestibility and the nature of
ghosts.
Do you
want to put it on the list for the future and
Yes. Flag
it up to me in real life Mm-hmm. Very early?
Okay.
Because I'll have to take propranolol and I'll have to get myself very calm. It can't be on a day where I'm busy.
Right.
God, I'm furious at just the thought of that experiment. Just the thought of it.
Yeah.
I have no words.
Oh, my God.
But I'll find some. Ryan Carter, I'm curious if there's any school of thought to reading auras that has any validity. Oh, for heavens, out the frying pan, into the fire. That has any validity to it in the same way that I've heard about with tarot readings.
Mm-hmm.
What? What validity has been ascribed to tarot readings? I've never subscribed to such things, but I once heard that getting a tarot reading isn't actually about telling your future, as is often advertised, but rather a ritualistic way that you can organise, process your thoughts, concerns and priorities. Framed that way, it actually sounds more worthwhile, though I don't think I'd bother going through the whole song and dance on a regular basis. Yeah, it totally is worthwhile to organise, process your thoughts, concerns and priorities. You don't need a pack of cards to do it.
Yeah, I think what you get from a tarot reading depends on the person doing the reading. And their intentions, their ability, all the rest of it. I think it varies so much that it's hard to pin down.
So it all depends on which dinner lady is pretending they're mystical. Not sure how reading auras could be applied, but I'm curious if you or Kate have any thoughts or insight on the idea. I love the show. I've been playing catch-up the last few weeks, and I have no idea how I got through 20-plus hours of content so quickly. I've been behind on other shows I listened to since August. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Ryan. I've no idea how we've recorded that many.
I know. No, but thank you. That's lovely. That we're bingeable. We're officially bingeable.
My blood pressure is already so bad in real life, and this must have contributed. It must have done.
Yeah. We'll have to pick a very zen topic next time, then.
Mark says, Dear Ian and Kate, I was wondering what is your opinion on the renewed popularity of astrology in the mainstream consciousness. It is possible that it never left, but I believe that it wasn't as popular prior to the pandemic. While this is obviously anecdotal, I have personally noticed an increasingly growing acceptance of it amongst young people. While like other supernatural beliefs, this could be obviously attributed to the lack of education or critical thinking, I do agree with the latter one. I have seen an almost universal belief in it among my classmates taking a postgraduate degree. I specify this because higher levels of education tend to correlate with scepticism towards such beliefs, yet astrology seems to avoid the usual stigma. P.S. Could you leave out my surname? Yeah, put that at the beginning of your message, Mark. Because now I've got to do a pickup now. It's no good telling me at the end, could you read this differently, please? Mark said that he tried to message me on Patreon about it, but it doesn't allow him to. I've not done it. It definitely will allow you to. I've not done it. It's very glitchy, Patreon, as a site, I find, on
yeah,
and off.
Yeah, enormously so. I think there's a good point there, definitely. But also, I would include crystals. And crystals as, not just as decorations, as very nice, pretty shiny things, but the belief that they have, like, healing abilities, abilities of memory, have all these esoterotic abilities that we can't really pin down.
But why? That's what he's asking. Why has that happened?
Personally, I think there's a lot to be said for things like TikTok and contemporary social media that kind of push this really pretty aesthetic, this kind of like diluted witchy thing. I think it might have been kicked along by that. But it's also, it's like crystals and astrology are kind of like this spiritual middle ground where you don't have to commit to an established religion, but you can still feel like you're dipping your toes into something a little bit mystical. Do we think so? You're looking at me in that horrible Crown Court way.
No, I'm not looking at you in a horrible way. I think TikTok and Twitter, I mean, I actually mean this.
Mm-hmm.
Will end the world.
Right.
And in people's dying breaths, they'll think, Oh, I was dancing on the internet. That's why I missed this. I was dancing on the internet.
I think it's power and importance, especially in pushing ideas, like you said, erotic ideas. Can't be overstated at all. I think it's incredibly important because of that visual element. And I think the visual element to astrology and crystals can be tracked alongside kind of youth social media. So if you go into New Look or places like that, or even say supermarket clothing sections, you will find loads of t-shirts that say don't talk to me until I've had my crystals or whatever. So it's huge now, but I think definitely the visual element helped push it.
I don't know about any of this because I'm not engaged on social media and I'm not engaged on... as a wider point as well, I don't know what's happening in the esoterotic community.
Mm.
I've got no idea. The only things I know about are things that you've told me.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I don't look at it. I don't go near it. I don't look at forums or Facebook or wherever they do their cult behaviour. I don't look at these things. So I'm unaware of any trends in anything. And again, this harks back to something I said earlier on. When I go outside, I don't see any of this.
Mm.
I mean, I don't go out very often. But when I do go outside into the real world,
yeah.
I don't see any evidence of any of this.
Yeah. I give you the highlights or the lowlights or whatever you want to call them.
There's no highlights.
Well, at least you can walk away from it. It follows me wherever I go.
Yeah. Spooks Malloy, this is the last comment. Hi, both. Just binging on all the episodes via Patreon, and I have to say this is genuinely the first podcast I've heard that talks about the paranormal that hasn't descended into weirdo reactionary politics, and it's brilliant. It's weird how a lot of the other self-professed experts in the paranormal and esoterotic also veer right on social matters and inevitably peddling conspiracy theories. Anyway, just finished the God Helmet episode and the good doctor's information about the God Helmet and the Estes method, and one of the things I've noticed is how often the paranormal community comes up with new techniques that just happen to look like cool things from recent horror films. The first Insidious film has a section where a medium uses a very aesthetic gas mask to block her senses, and similar things are now coincidentally cropping up in TV shows and other assorted chuff. Excellent use of the word chuff there. Probably coincidental, spoilers it's not. Banging show, you both made a very hard time in my life just a bit easier. That's a nice thing. Thank you,
yeah,
Spooks.
Thank you.
That's a pleasure.
I think it's a good point, though. I think the visual... Well, it's like crystals again, isn't it? It's the visual
trends,
aspect.
Trends, isn't it? We've inadvertently stumbled on trends here.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
As a theme.
And I think, like Spooks was saying, the visual aspect of that kind of gas mask in Insidious, also, it's... I wouldn't say that people have copied from that, but I say that is just reinventing a tradition. Because really, that was very, very similar to the use of spirit trumpets in the 19th century, which in the way that they would, inverted commas, levitate, would fulfil that spooky visual element. And we've just sort of changed with the times. But, you know, what looks good?
Well, I called it on Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah.
Very early on, I called it on Ghostbusters that this is all derivative of Ghostbusters, a fictional film from the 80s.
When you first said that, I thought, I'd never thought about it before, and I thought, oh, you just, you know, just poking fun. And then it was like the week afterwards, every male paranormal investigator that I saw was referencing Ghostbusters, how they wanted to be a Ghostbuster on film, on Facebook, on anything. And it was just like, oh my God, how could I have not seen that before?
That's what's happened. I've long held that belief that it's the film Ghostbusters that we need to j'accuse.
But it was also...
That's where this has come from.
I'd say people that were in their 30s and below weren't referencing it. So I don't know if there's cut-off point.
No, it's okay, because the ball's already rolling at that point.
Right,
all you need is your first rush of army.
Mm.
It's all the Ghostbusters kids.
Yeah.
They do it, and then the ball rolls from there onwards. Yeah. But the actual origin of this in modern society and popular culture as well now is Ghostbusters.
Yes.
It's the one film. And do you remember, I said that to someone in a very gentle way. I said that to someone and they admitted it. They said, yes, absolutely, it's Ghostbusters. And then chucked the toys out of the pram and had a big flounce. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember. But it's
they were
it's
very
also...
considered. Yeah. I'd got them exactly right. I'd nailed them.
Yeah.
They were daft enough to say, yes, Ian is right. So they admitted it.
Yeah.
And then went in a big strop.
But I also think that love of Ghostbusters is applied to both sides, like skeptics and investigators slash believers alike.
Same.
Both sides, you know, very regularly, publicly come out and say, I'm in my field because of Ghostbusters. So it's like the universal leveler. Yeah.
But don't say that and not understand how that has hypnotised you. That the reason you wear the things you wear on your paranormal investigations aren't because they're useful, it's because in your head you look a bit like a Ghostbuster. By the way, you don't,
yeah.
incidentally. How you feel it looks isn't how it looks at all. You don't look as cool as a Ghostbuster at all. You don't.
No, and you know...
You look stupid. You look like you've been dressed in Toys R Us, mate. And much as you wish to be Venkman, you never will be, because I am. You will never be me. Jealous. Should we start the episode? We've done 40 minutes.
Yeah. Welcome to Loopholes, episode 28.
Jealous.
So this week,
yes, ma'am.
I think we should have a little chat about the unified theory of the paranormal.
Right.
Okay, so it's...
Now, is that the thing... So I thought you were doing this last week. You threw me off last week, because when I said, what are we talking about this week? I was pretty sure you'd said to me at some point, I'm going to do that. So I said, oh, I don't know what you're doing this week. And then it turned out I really didn't know what you were doing this week, because you just threw a complete curveball at me with auras. You'd not mentioned auras to me at any point.
Well, I like to keep things fresh and funky. So, let's
Sorry,
look.
Are you saying you'd like to keep things fresh and funky straight after saying you're going to talk about the unified theory of the paranormal?
Yes, that is, exactly what I'm saying. I'm a young, hip and happening person. So let's talk about the unified theory of the paranormal.
So is this the thing that was mentioned a few weeks ago in a comment?
Yeah.
That I attributed the thing that happened in the deleted scene
from
the movie to...
Yes, yeah. It's
the aliens thing.
Well, it's the theory that all unexplained phenomena, whether it's, you know, aliens, ghosties, cryptids, or, like, even abilities, like being psychic, things like that, can all be understood under the same umbrella. Like, they all have the same common cause. It's kind of like a way of reorganising the paranormal.
And where's this come from as an idea? So is this someone who's just been panicking, going, do you know what? They've got arguments for everything. Everything we believe in, there's a really solid argument that disproves it. Let's do a catch-all thing.
Well, really, it kind of originated with John Keel, who was the guy that wrote the Mothman Prophecies. So he was a journalist, and he kind of documented the Mothman incidents in, I think it was like 1966, where for like just over a year, this place in West Virginia had loads of sightings of this winged humanoid. They had animal mutilations, lights in the sky, all these sort of weird phenomena. Mm. And so he documented that, but at the same time was working on this secondary book called The Eighth Tower. And this is where we start getting this theory put together. And he kind of hypothesised that in incidents like this, where you have loads and loads of like eyewitness testimony, but a real sparsity of physical evidence, like with UFOs, you might get a bit of a landing pad or crop circle, or you might get a footprint from Bigfoot. So he thought that this would fall into sort of the pre-existing window area belief system, which is that places where paranormal events are more commonly recorded or more expected to happen, and where, again, you get this lack of physical evidence, is because there's kind of like a gap in the ozone layer, which is what I said the other week and ended up with my GB News show.
Yeah.
But he believed that all of these entities were seen because they're able to shift up and down the electromagnetic spectrum.
Is this because there's a correlation between places where there's lots of UFO sightings and moments of paranormal reported incidents?
Yeah, that there are correlations between...
So and that's quite straightforward. So the loophole there would be, well, it's a community that have got form for this.
Well, that...
They've
that
got
would
form
be,
for drawing attention to themselves.
That would
One
be
week
a
it's, oh, that we saw a UFO, and the next week it's, oh, there's ghosts as well. There's that, oh, so that means that UFOs and aliens is to do with ghosts.
See? One big umbrella. So he...
Wait and see what I say next week. What we all say, we're agreed, we're all going to say it, right? We are all going to say that it happened.
He proposed that these beings would appear and disappear at will using this sort of like central corridor, and he called this the super spectrum. And so all creatures that used it, like everything under this banner, we can just broadly call them ultra-terrestrials. And by saying that they use this electromagnetic spectrum, it's really handy with ghost hunters and people that believe that strange beings can use electromagnetism or different frequencies to communicate, things like that, because we have so many EMF associations within the paranormal. Like, you've got those EMF readers that people use on ghost hunts.
And give them Ghostbusters, remember? Yeah. So, if someone who's been a long time ghost hunter,
yeah,
buster in their head,
yes,
someone that's been doing that for a long time, suddenly now goes, do you know what? I subscribe to that belief.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this unified theory thing, that's what I think now. I think that now.
Yeah.
Then it follows, and I'm not budging on this.
Okay.
You have to then recant everything you believed before. So you have to recant, so-and-so died here, and that's why you hear chains. You have to recant poltergeist. Oh, there were dishes being flown around and everything, and that was caused by a spirit in the house that was agitated. And that was it. You've got to recant all that. It's all got to go. Because it can't be both. Well, is that fair enough? Is that fair comment?
I think since then, the theory has been kind of melded and changed by several people.
Well, of course it has, for convenience. Of course it has. You can't have a quote-unquote scientific theory that isn't something you can waver about in between to suit your story.
But also, even if it makes things problematic for ghosty people,
yeah,
it can also be attributed to more unexplained and less exciting phenomena. So by definition, this theory of the paranormal can be applied to like massive power outages and when the way batteries drain, or when like clocks stop and people think that's because there's a UFO nearby. And that was very popular in the 90s, because I'm still working through my rewatch of The X-Files, and it's happened in several episodes now.
X-Files is another one, by the way.
Yeah.
So that, generationally.
Yeah.
That's another. So that would probably be the next one, generationally.
Yeah.
So you've got Ghostbusters in the 80s, X-Files in the 90s. Yeah.
I will happily hold my hands up and say now that I gain a lot of inspiration from both Mulder and Scully.
Yeah. Followed by Most Haunted, but Most Haunted was correlating what had actually already formed culturally.
Yes. I think Most Haunted might fall into a different camp because they weren't straightforward scripted entertainment fiction.
Yeah, but I'd say that Most Haunted was as a result of, rather than something that was influential in making...
Yes.
I guess it insidiously recruited people that believe in all that. But it wasn't that it was a spark, it was a reaction. Mm-hmm. Most Haunted was a reaction to things that the spark of Ghostbusters, the spark of The X-Files had started.
Yeah, definitely.
Can I also say, by the way, I think this is important, that I might have been dismissive of Ghostbusters in terms of... I don't mean dismissive, I love Ghostbusters, but I might have been dismissive in terms of like, oh, I said earlier on, this fictional film.
Mm-hmm.
I will acknowledge that one of the writers of Ghostbusters absolutely believes in all this.
Yeah, is all in.
Like, totally believes it. And the science in it, he thinks makes sense.
Yeah.
He will maintain it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, he's also entrenched in, like, a big, big spiritualist background, so...
Good
credentials on both sides, really.
Yeah, but I want to acknowledge that as saying it's not something that was just a big pretend thing.
Yes.
As far as Dan Aykroyd's concerned, he wouldn't see it all as a pretend thing.
No, not at all.
You know, even though the stories pretend, he would say, no, but it is grounded in what he says is science.
Yeah. But just to make things even easier for you to enjoy with this unified theory of the paranormal, is that everything that falls under this banner of esoterotica, so like all of these beasties that we've been talking about, are native to the Earth. So they've been here forever, but they inhabit different physical dimensions that are kind of outside of our usual human perception. So it's like we've been saying with the aura the other week, when it's just on different levels of perception, or how we think that like dogs and cats have this extra supernatural sense because they're more open and they can see ghosts and they can see things that we can't because we've become closed off to them. So there's a lot of the theory that sort of builds on these pre-existing beliefs of, you know, what we pay attention to is what we expect to see rather than what's actually there. So this idea that we've become closed off, that only momentarily do we see these beings, that these ultra-terrestrials that pop in and out of our plane of existence.
I don't know how to say this differently. I wish I could think of a creative way of saying the same old thing differently. If people are closed off to it, they will never see it. That's the quote.
Yes.
But people who are closed off to it claim they've seen it constantly.
Ah, but you see, they've built that in, because when you study it more,
of course
you see
built
it more.
It in.
So there's a few examples that are always put up with this theory.
A GCSE science teacher would look at this and go, this is absolute nonsense. This is just fundamentally wrong.
Yeah, I know. But look, there are,
even I know that.
There are groups of people that like try and instigate communication with aliens and things like that with focused, purposeful sort of meditation and believing that they can have direct and, again, purposeful interactions with UFOs. Via group focus.
Do you want to know the one that I... my experience of this?
Okay.
The one that I met...
yeah.
Who believed in all this.
Mm-hmm.
Who was deleted from the movie.
Yeah.
The producer had met him in a pub.
Mm-hmm.
And insisted he was in the film. So that shows you the environment I was working in.
Yeah.
Right? He was dragged to this forest.
Mm-hmm.
Where I met him for the first time. Now, I can say hand on heart, and he had, basically, he'd made some kit that was to fire lights up into the sky, which would attract, this is layman's terms, would attract UFOs stroke aliens
yeah.
and bring them down. And he said, it always works. That's what he said, always works. Which I thought was pretty bold.
Yeah,
for, you know,
yeah.
for someone who was coming into a film to be filmed. Doing that, it's like he essentially guaranteed it would work.
Yeah.
So what it working, it turned out, meant was that his bowl that he had, which had fairy lights in it, and I'm not even exaggerating, that was kind of all it was,
yeah.
really, that certain one of those lights would come on, and that meant they were here.
Yeah.
Right, that's what that meant. We don't even need to discuss that. He did it. He had his hands in his pockets a lot of the time, and I made him take his hands out of his pockets because I thought he was working them from his mm-hmm. pockets remotely. And when he took his hands out of his pockets, they didn't work anymore. But I don't know conclusively that's what was happening.
Yeah.
But the thing I would say the most about it was he sort of frightened me.
Yes.
Because I've never been, I don't think, that close to someone who was... entrenched in their belief, kind of passive aggressive, sometimes bordering into aggressive, utterly humourless about it. That's ultimately why it was cut from the film, because it was humourless and it was actually uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I caught him out on something that was just straightforward,
yeah.
completely caught him out. He quoted that a picture that was purportedly where we were, I said, no, that picture was actually in a concentration camp and that has been discredited now.
Mm-hmm.
And even at that point, he was saying, well, I'll have to check that. I was like, you don't need to. I've checked it already.
Yeah.
that is true. But there was no humour or, in my opinion, humanity there. Like, it felt really how I would imagine cult behaviour
yeah.
would be. Someone who was so entrenched in it that they lost all perspective of human interaction.
And that begs the question, doesn't it? If all of this is ultimately to try and communicate with these ultra-terrestrials, what do you want to say to them? If you've lost all your humanity and all that makes you, you know, a functioning person, what will you say to them when the goblins come down? What's the end game?
But he said that he'd experienced it loads of time. You know, other than the time he was being filmed, according to him, this always worked.
Oh, right. Well,
100% of the time, fail-safe, absolutely always worked.
Yeah.
So he didn't really express what was going on with that. It was quite difficult to follow, in fairness. It did feel quite uncomfortable. And by the way, intentionally not naming this person because they're not here to discuss it, and I don't really want to draw attention to them either.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just a person.
Yes.
And I'm not... I don't think I'm misrepresenting them at all. You know, this is... Obviously, part and parcel of this is my assessment and my opinion of that person. But in terms of what they were saying and the sort of thing they were saying, I don't believe that I'm misrepresenting what happened.
No, I've seen the footage and I can say you're not. You're being quite kind, really.
Right.
So, yeah, with this unified theory, with so much of it relying on mental focus And kind of building on things like Jung's theory of collective unconsciousness, that we're all born with a certain set of memories and thoughts and impulses, like the fear of snakes and spiders. I think there's a quote by Alan Moore that I can never remember, so I'll paraphrase it. But when talking about magic, Alan Moore said that magic absolutely exists and it works. And that's fine to say that as long as you understand that everything is happening inside your own head. So I think a lot of this unified theory builds on theories that are already based around personal mental interpretations.
But it's a doctrine. It feels like a doctrine.
Yeah.
You know, it feels, there's something about this that feels different to just, oh, I believe in ghosts and I go ghost hunting. It just feels a bit, it feels to me more sinister.
Yeah.
In that it's so regimented.
Yeah. It's that we live on this multidimensional planet. So it's first of all accepting that it's multidimensional and that these beings that exist on these different planes have been here longer than we have, you know, maybe since the dawn of time, depending on who you ask. And we just need to widen our perception of reality. And it's the means that we use to widen these perceptions, I think, could be a bit dodgy. So we only need to widen our perception to finally see the full breadth of existence that already surrounds us. And if you accept that, then it explains all of Esoterotica and ties it up in one nice, neat bow.
But you have to recant poltergeists. All these things you believed, ectoplasm, it's gone.
I will never recant ectoplasm.
I'm saying for the people that subscribe to this belief system, you have to recant everything else. You can't have both. You can't. Because what you said the thing was before, this has said, no, that's not what it is at all.
I think ghosts are still held onto that. But then, yeah, would ghosts be seen as the same beings that have been there since the dawn of time? Have they evolved?
Well,
Do we join this next realm after we die?
They can't have been there since the dawn of time, because at some point they were living, weren't they?
Well, surely. It depends on what your interpretation of ghosts is. And then we get into this horrible cycle of define a ghost. Is it a person? Is it a concept? Is it a ball of energy?
I can define it for you in one word.
Yeah, let's not, shall we?
Sinister. I find it sinister.
Right,
this.
Okay.
How frightening.
Yeah. So, I suppose if you have any thoughts on any other unified theories of the paranormal, do get in touch. And you can do so via several ways. You can contact us on either of our Patreons at patreon.com/Ian Bolesworth and patreon.com/burialsandbeyond, on Instagram at loopholespod, on Twitter at loopholespod, and you can send us an email at loopholespodcast@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening. I've been Kate Cheryl.
I've been Ian Bolesworth. Calm and collected.
Yes. Lovely, lovely Zen aromatherapy podcast.
One day they're going to kill me.
Bye!
I regret nothing!
Loopholes is an Infinite Hermit production in association with Burials and Beyond, with Kate Cheryl and Ian Bolesworth. Music by Thomas Funderay, produced by Ian Bolesworth.